And greetings to everyone out there listening. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Z, and you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, where we discuss issues in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. Welcome again to the program. Really excited you're joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule. And we have a very interesting guest. We've never really discussed this topic at all on our program in the many years we've been on the air, both on our public stations and listener-supported stations. Dr. Kamai and myself have been doing radio together since 1990. It's a long time to be on the air continuously doing radio, and we're really excited to continue to do that type of cutting-edge radio where we interview top authors and, you know, discuss things. I'm a naturopathic physician and one of the founding fathers of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, where I'm a faculty there and one of the key instructors in the botanical medicine department, and so is Dr. Kamai and other schools. And we're really excited, again, to bring you this cutting-edge information. You can always get more information about our walks and talks. Actually, we're going to Chinatown. We have our Chinatown trip coming up in September, which is right now, and that date is September 22nd. You can get more information on naturalnurse.com about our tour through Chinatown, New York City. But without further ado, we have a very interesting author, Dr. Gary Wegman. He's a PhD and a licensed acupuncturist, the doctor of OM, Oriental Medicine, and he was one of the he was the first foreign student at the Daejeon University of Oriental Medicine in South Korea, and lived in Asia for more than 8 years. He's the founder of Harmony Clinic and the American Institute of Korean Medicine, and he lives in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, it's funny, I had a colleague that also studied Korean medicine, Dr. Wegman. Great to be here on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me and for that lovely introduction.
Great. Now, we've discussed a lot about traditional Chinese medicine, but not as much Korean medicine. I know, because I'm a black belt in Tangsu Do, I know a little bit about how the ancient Korea, actually the Tang Dynasty, influenced the Tangsu Do and many of the martial arts there. And I'm sure that they influenced the medicine of Korea. How did you get interested in, for instance, Oriental medicine, Asian medicine, and then how did you kind of go to Korea versus studying, for instance, Chinese medicine or Japanese medicine?
Okay, yeah, so if I were to describe all the twists and turns in my life, I think we'd have to have like a 10-hour show, so I'll make it as short as I can, Dr.
Okay.
Eugene. So, well, basically, I was, as a child, I was always suffering from stomach aches, headaches, and I was just a frail child. My mom put me on antibiotics a lot of the time to try and help me overcome, you know, common strep and common colds and things like that. So, as a child, I lost my father to cancer. So, my whole life was sort of when I was a child, was trying to figure out, you know, gosh, you know, how do I stay healthy? And also, can I keep others in my family healthy? So I went about this long and twisted way to try and figure out how to be healthy myself. And it's funny you say about, not funny, but a coincidence you say, Dr. Eugene, about the black belt, because that's what got me started in the Oriental arts. It was... Wow. Going for karate black belt, and it was a dream of mine for a while, and finally made it, and then went to Japan to do a little studying there, and wound up really loving Japan. The first time I was there, actually, was when I was 13, and I begged my mom. I said, please let me go to Asia. I'm really, really interested in going to Asia, and so she found a distant cousin living there. I stayed with them. Loved it there, and loved it even more when I was training there. And then went to college there for my undergrad. I went for a year there to study Japanese language and history. And then a friend of mine, while I was studying there, was Korean. He says, hey, you know, you should check out our country too. If you like it here, I'm sure you'll like it where we live in Korea. So I took his offer and went out there and really loved the country. So after I got my bachelor degree, I went there to teach English. And again, was kind of frail at the time, so wound up getting a treatment, an acupuncture treatment. And at that time, up to that time, I was deathly afraid of needles. I would faint when I saw one. So here, this elderly Korean man is placing needles in my body, and what do? I faint on his table. It's quite embarrassing, but I woke up, or gained my consciousness back shortly afterwards, and I was. Otherwise, I was feeling pretty good. My stomach, my headache, everything, my back, everything felt pretty good. And I thought, wow, this is what I was looking for my whole life. I really was looking for something natural to help people and help myself get better. And so I asked him, kind of, where do I study this? And he goes, well, you know, we never had any foreign students here, so I don't know. Go find out. And, you know, so long story short, Dr. Eugene, I did, and went back to the States and found a college out in Los Angeles, and it was a Chinese medical college, and I, you know, also went through many, many acupuncture treatments in between to overcome my own fear of needles and, you know, also falling in love with it more and more. Anyway, so, but while I was going through college, I tried many different formulas. You know, I had some great, great teachers, and they'd work with hours with me, you know, trying to figure out what formula I could use to help my body, my stomach ache, my headaches, my backache, this and that, my common colds and everything. And we were really struggling to find out one that would work. And it wasn't until like 3 years into my studies that a Korean professor came to visit our college, and she said, hey, why don't you try this one? It's based on your constitution, your Sasang constitution. I'm like, what do you mean Sasang constitution? So I thought she was, you know, really sweet and kind, but I thought, hey, what else could be out there? And I really didn't give it, you know, any benefit of the doubt, but I guess I tried anyway. And I couldn't believe it. I felt energetic. My stomach ache, headache, back aches, went pretty much within a 5 days, 6 day time went away. And so I asked her, where do I study this stuff? I really want to know more about it. And she's like, well, you got to go back to Korea. So long story short, went back to Korea and studied there for another 3 years, and then came back and started my clinic and also practiced Sasang, the Korean constitutional medicine.
Yeah.
So that's in a nutshell.
That's great. What a great story. I love when things like that really change your life. You know, I have similar, you know, amazing stories like that that, you know, I've talked about with my listeners how I got to this path too as a licensed naturopathic doctor, and I helped found the first naturopathic school on the East Coast in 100 years and things like that. But so yeah, so you know what's interesting about this type of medicine that I was reading your book, both books actually, but I know we want to talk a lot more about, well, the first book was your yin-yang body type, so we'll maybe touch base on some of those concepts, and then yin-yang balance for menopause. But you know, you talked about constitutions that people have. So I found that that's like one of those things that permeates all the ancient medicines, whether it's Ayurvedic medicine or some of the ancient medicines from around the planet. They always talk about kind of treating the people that have the disease, not the disease the people have. So you work with the patient, and you look at their underlying imbalances and what types of illnesses they may manifest, and it seems to be fairly predictable if you could figure out their body type. So what a great type of medicine that is. So tell us about the Sasang body types.
Right, yeah, so the other approaches definitely have all the respect for it, because you're right. The further back you go, absolutely, you touched on the fact that there's more emphasis on body type and constitution, which is basically Sasong medicine as well focuses on the constitution. And, you know, really healing, because it happens from the inside out, we really are, as practitioners, you know, of course, I'm sure you know this, but, you know, we're focusing more on the patient. And I was reading your website, you mentioned too, you know, it's more that your focus is on the patient and preventing disease. And I think that's so true with Satsang medicine too, is that, you know, you're really focused on, okay, what is this person's inherent weaknesses and strengths? And since you're, you know, you're only meeting this person for, what, 5-10 minutes and trying to figure out their constitution, it can be very difficult. But as a Satsang practitioner, what we really look for is right down to the core of what it is that makes, that helps this person's energies flow. So we check the pulse, we look at the skin, we listen to the voice tone, how patients carry themselves. So basically every psychosomatic marker possible. But in Satsang medicine, basically what they say is that each person is born with a very different set of strengths and weaknesses. And these strengths and weaknesses are based on which organ, we call them organ groups or organ patterns, are developed at birth and which ones are not as developed at birth. So we have hyperdeveloped organs and hypodeveloped organs. And the hyperdeveloped organs manifest in certain ways physically, but also emotionally, as well as the hypodeveloped organs. And so, for example, the yin type B is born with a stronger kidney, and the kidney correlates with calmness and relaxation. So that's basically what they portray, but it's also what they strive for. And if they can't get to that point in their lives, that's when different illnesses and issues tend to happen. Also, the kidneys in Oriental medicine govern the lower part of the body. So the yin type B happens to have a stronger lower half of their body from the waist down. But issues can arise from the stronger organs just like they can arise from the weaker organs. And that's why in Satsang medicine, what we're trying to do is create balance between stronger systems and weaker systems that we're basically born with. So herbs in Satsang medicine are based on the body type and also what each body type is manifesting according to the relationship between their stronger systems and weaker systems.
What does Satsang actually mean? Translate.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. So Satsang, Sa is the Korean word for four, and Sang means symbols. So basically, it's describing a very old theory or concept from the I Ching, or the Book of Changes, which supposedly is one of the oldest texts. Actually, it wasn't a text. It was inscribed on the back of tortoise shells in China. And it goes back roughly 3,000 years back to the Shang Dynasty, and which is basically the first dynasty in China. In this book, inscription, it describes how all things in the universe start with this Tai Chi, just like the Tai Chi symbol that we see today, the yin and yang symbol, black and white. So this Tai Chi symbol is a combination of yin and yang. And so in the beginning, basically this symbol splits into two and creates a separate yin and a separate yang. But this yin and yang are only concepts. By themselves, they have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. It's only when they intermingle with each other that they start to manifest as actual separate entities, separate but connected entities. So we have, when yin and yang separate further, they separate into yin within yang, yang within yang, yin within yin, and yang within yin. And these are what the Book of Changes, or the I Ching, describe as the four symbols. So they're basically the four basic, most primary components of all things. We can think of it as DNA, and the four nucleotides of DNA, which create all life. And we can think of it as the four seasons or the four directions. Sure, we can have just two directions, but there's absolutely no way we can make do with that. We cannot find our way through the woods with just two directions. And the four seasons, sure, we can say we just have, you know, summer and winter, but there's transitions in between. So there are, you know, we can say there's a very yang body type and there's a very yin body type, but there's also the yin within yang and yang within yin body types too. So these are basic, the four basic components, and also in Zazhang medicine we say the four basic organ systems, which are the lungs, the spleen system, the liver system, and the kidney system. So each body type will have a stronger system and a weaker system. Like the yang type A, they have a very stronger upper body, and they have a stronger spleen system, but they have a weaker kidney system, so they have a weaker lower body. So that's kind of it.
Yeah, that's cool. So, you know, yin and yang is a, you know, very ancient concept. So just to make it simple for the listeners, so some people, yin and yang, we have to have both components in our bodies at the same time. But sometimes there's a predominance of one versus the other. They're supposed to be in balance, right? According to, but you're saying that sometimes we're born with imbalance. Maybe that was the ancient, you know, this idea about genetics, that we got some of these constitutional things from our ancestors and parents and lineage. And we're some of these things are inherently, like, we're born with some of these things. And then I guess it's a part of our life to identify the weakness early on so we can live a life in accordance with our constitution to keep those areas strong. Is that
it's exactly
nutshell, pretty
that,
much?
That's,
yeah?
Yeah, you really have a good take on it, absolutely. But there is one thing that Zazhang medicine does acknowledge, and that is even if we, you know, the idea behind the medicine is really to balance the stronger and weaker organs. But it also acknowledges the fact that there is no such thing as perfect balance. If yin and yang were in perfect balance, that would mean that they would no longer interact with one another. They would have no reason to. In other words, yang would do its thing, which yang rises, so the yang energy would just simply go up. And yin would do its thing. Yin likes to sink, so yin would sink downwards. It's only when they intermingle. But in order for yin and yang to intermingle, they have to give up their own desire to go in their own direction. And that's how it is in the human body, that these imbalances or these slight imbalances, or they can be, you know, they can be larger imbalances or not so intense imbalances, would actually help yin and yang flow. Yang has to come down, yin has to go up. And in Zazhang medicine, we say that that's a sign of health. When yin can rise, even though that's a yang thing, and yang can sink, even though that's a yin thing, that's when we have perfect health. It's only when they separate from each other. We can think of it, you know, sort of in a philosophical standpoint as well, too. If you look at the Earth tilted on its axis 23 degrees, I forget the exact amount of tilt on the axis, but anyway, it's that tilt of the axis that actually gives us the four seasons. If the Earth was completely straight, we wouldn't have the variety that we need for the plants to grow and for us to fight through illness and strengthen our immune systems, for example, when we have different seasonal issues. So the imbalance is, in Zazhang medicine, we say, is kind of inherent. But we can strive for as much balance as possible, which means that even though there's an imbalance to some degree, that all the energies are right where they need to be, flowing into one another.
It's like the water cycle, how, you know, water evaporates, forms the clouds, then it rains, thunder, more yang energy, you know, and then violent, and then it draws back to rain. It's interesting. We just had a big thunderstorm here last night, but yeah, it's kind of the way of nature. So you're basically saying that we as humans, mirror nature, and the ancients saw this as a mirroring system, and what we see in the universe is, and the world and whatnot is happening inside our bodies in a way.
Exactly. That, I think, was the beauty, as you say, of the ancient medicines, that we are connected to one another and also to nature.
So with that in mind, how does one go about finding your constitution? I know we can look at your book and you have questionnaires in there, But what would the practice? What would you do in your office if I came in and said, you know, doc, I've been having some problems, you know, X, Y, Z. What can you do for me? How would you assess and then figure out? And we could talk about some of the herbs too. I'm pretty knowledgeable in TCM herbology myself, so it'd be interesting to talk about some of those botanicals. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that with you. Sure. To get started, basically, if somebody comes in and comes in to see me and talks about XYZ, my mind and eyes are going a mile a minute at that particular point because I'm really, really focused on this person and how they present themselves. My patients don't have to know that, but some of them do. I may ask questions, left field, right field questions that really have nothing, at least nothing seemingly to do with their symptoms. What I'm really, really interested in this particular point, now I'm taking into account why they're coming in, but what I'm really, really interested is looking at every possible clue I could find about this person. So again, the shape of their body, the voice tone, the skin, how they discuss their symptoms is very, very important to me. If somebody says, oh yeah, I have this, you know, little shoulder pain, it's no big deal, or if they're really stuck in that shoulder pain, or if they're talking about shoulder pain, but there's somewhere else in the body that's really talking out to me, either physiologic, you know, when I look at the structure of their body, or when I check the pulse. And the pulse is another very, very intricate way to understand more about my patient. Where are they carrying their energies? As Satsang practitioners, you know, as soon as we check the pulse, we can't really necessarily say, okay, this is this person is this body type or this person is that body type. But it's a window into how this particular individual carries their energies. So we're really looking at a very integrated process to get to know the patient. But the symptom is kind of like the icing on the cake. The symptom is when I went to school for Chinese medicine, I remember how we would trace the etiology back from the symptom. So we'd say, okay, this is a patient with back pain. Let's think about, you know, five or six different ways this back pain started. Or if somebody had, for example, no appetite, then we'd think about five or six things that could cause the lack of appetite. Would it be stomach fire, stomach cold, dampness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in Satsang medicine, we go the absolute opposite way. We look at the person, and once we are able to sort of recognize different energetic patterns based on how they carry themselves physically and emotionally, that's when we look at the symptom and go, oh, okay, this is how that symptom ties in with that person. So even if in Satsang medicine, even if we don't know what that symptom is, say the person comes in, the client comes in and says, I really don't know what's going on with me, you know, or could you just basically give me something to support my health? Well, we usually have enough to do that even without knowing what symptom or exactly what might be plaguing this particular person. So to answer your question, it's a very holistic process, but there are defined ways to decipher the constitution. I guess the longer a practitioner does it, the easier it gets for them, because then they're able to look at certain clues. So generally speaking, if somebody came to see me within about 5 minutes, I would probably be able to know their constitution.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, it kind of falls into place how they would then, you know, kind of be treated. Or do you get involved with, you know, kind of diet to balance your yin yang body type and particular ways of thinking, and also things like qigong or particular exercises that mesh with someone's constitution as well?
Precisely, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. The yang constitutions tend to benefit more from relaxing, calming exercises, and the yin constitutions, quite the contrary, more cardiovascular exercise that produces quite a bit of sweat. And also when it comes to food, the yin types tend to benefit from yang type foods, which would be warm-natured foods, not necessarily spicy foods, although that can be part of it. And the young types benefit.
Well, looks like we lost Dr. Wagman. Hello, Dr. Wagman, are you there? Okay, well, engineer, maybe we could go to a natural medicine chest and see if we can get Dr. Wagman back on the air.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back with more of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and hopefully we're back with Dr. Wagman. Dr. Wagman, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, good to hear you. Okay.
Great,
well,
good to hear you.
Let's talk about your book, your menopause book. So we have a good, you know, fundamental understanding of Sesong and staying healthy versus being sick and understanding constitution and the word and a little bit about the balance of yin and yang and some of the organs that you look at and how you would maybe work up a patient. So now let's focus on what the topic of today is, which is menopause. So how would you describe menopause both from a Western, you know, perspective versus your own perspective?
Sure. So, from not being a Western medical doctor, I might be I don't want to sound like I'm bashing Western medicine without knowing as much as a medical doctor might about it. However, again, Sasong medicine really focuses on the individual and our perspective of what we go through. So when I'm talking what we go through, I mean going through menopause, going through whatever issues we may have in our lives. It really boils down to how we see it from our compass. And Sasong medicine is kind of like a compass to figure out what coordinates that we go through life with. So menopause is no exception to that. And, you know, to be honest, Dr. Eugene, there were several things in my life that I felt like, yes, you know, I am definitely going to get into oriental medicine. I definitely want to help other people. But I really originally had no clue that I'd be writing a book about menopause or even knowing anything about it. But it turns out that most of my clients were of menopausal age in the area that I practice. I've been practicing here for about 20 years. And so I, throughout the years, I applied those Sasong concepts to menopause, to addressing whatever menopause-related issues that women may face. And so basically, if we take, for example, hot flashes, which is the most common menopausal symptom, in Western medicine, of course, it's acknowledged that the internal thermostat of the body is off. So, and that has a lot to do with either progesterone or estrogen dominance in the body, throwing off this internal thermostat. But in both Western and Eastern medicine, we acknowledge that it's not the body increasing in temperature, it's displaced heat. Well, this is kind of where Western medicine stops in its explanation. It says, well, you know, if we supplement with estrogen, most likely hot flashes will go away. Well, to some degree, they are right. However, estrogen itself, and I won't get too far into this, has definitely have to be careful with because it tends to produce symptoms. And if not taken in the right dose or at the right time, could also even predispose somebody to cancerous cell growth. But so basically, leaves Western medicine with only a few other approaches, like trying antidepressants and seeing if that it's a emotionally related issue where emotions trigger hot flashes. And in some women, that's the case. And so that can be helpful to some degree as well for some people. So, but again, the core of the issue is why is this heat being displaced and what do hormones have to do with that? That's kind of a gray area for Western medicine. In Sasong medicine, each body type will have a yin and a yang energy flow. Yang correlates with heat and yin correlates with cold. So one may say, well, how can the yin types get hot flashes or how can they experience hot flashes if they have so much yin? Well, in Sasong medicine, we say, well, a lot of the time yin can encircle and entrap yang and cause it eventually to sort of burst outwards. And that would be in the case of menopause, possibly a hot flash. Whereas the yang types are hot to begin with, and so it's nothing new for them a lot of the time to experience these sudden flashes of heat. They may have experienced it even before menopause during or right before their cycle starts, right before the monthly cycle starts. So Sasong medicine looks at these issues one by one and says, okay, well, how does yin and yang flow in this person's body? And how is this body going through menopause? Because menopause really is just simply, well, I shouldn't say simple because it's not a simple process as, you know, many women that I know, but that it is a process of renewal. So in other words, the body's calibration system is shifting gears, and working through that shift takes a lot of work. And a lot of the time, recalibrating yin and yang within the body as well.
Let's take somebody who was kind of yin. Describe what someone who was too yin would be like coming in your office, and how would you like? What would they look like physically, so that patients can say, oh, "That sounds like me."
yeah, sure. You know, when we talk just about four body types, it's very, very difficult to really give a description of this is exactly what this body type looks like, or this is exactly what that body type looks like. There's sort of a dominant, if you will, theme, but that doesn't necessarily ring true for everybody of a particular body type. So if we were to say, for example, the yin type Bs, the yin type A. The yin type A body type is born with a weaker lung system, organ system, and a stronger liver organ system. So the yin type A tends to be a little rounder on the edges, and this is, I wouldn't say necessarily obese. They definitely are the body type which have a tendency to carry more fat tissue, but I've seen, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good, sorry. So I've seen some yin type A's who are actually quite thin, so it's not necessarily all across the board, but I'd say predominantly they tend to be a little rounder on the edges. And the liver also is an organ which absorbs blood. It absorbs everything from the bloodstream to filter it out. And this is why this absorbing energy is very strong for the yin type A's. So the yin type A would be a little rounder around the edges. And also, yin is cold, so they would also probably be likely to either feel cold at their extremities, have colder hands and feet. They may be sensitive to the cold in general. They may be, since they are born with a weaker, relatively weaker lung system, they may be prone to colds, common colds, and that type of thing. So you would be looking for a yin type B who either is somebody who is prone to cold, like I said, rounder on the edges. And even if the yin type A isn't rounder on the edges, their rib cage in the bottom of the rib cage tends to flare out a little bit as if to prepare for the accumulation of fat around the abdomen, even if they are on the skinny side. So that's just one example of how somebody may look like their body type.
Now, menopause affects many things like the bones and energy and libido and all kinds of things like that. So how do any of those symptomologies play into the body type? In other words, would some constitutions be more prone to having loss of libido or drier, dyspareunia, you know, painful intercourse for dryness?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. So yin-yang balance for menopause actually devotes a chapter for every one of those situations that you described, for libido, bone, for osteoporosis or osteopenia, urinary disorders. We even have a chapter there for what we call 50-year shoulder, which is oshipgyon in Korean. It's basically a situation that in Western medicine really isn't necessarily associated with menopause, but I've seen a lot of women come into the clinic with this issue. Basically, it's what in Western medicine would be called the frozen shoulder. But in Oriental medicine, we say that it's 50-year shoulder because it tends to happen around menopausal onset or perimenopausal onset. So each of these chapters will describe these situations and also break down why a particular body type might be more prone than others. Bone mass loss is a perfect example of that. The yin type B is born with stronger kidneys, and the kidneys in both Chinese and Korean medicine correlate with the bones. So the stronger the kidney, the stronger the bones. So the yin type B is less prone postmenopausal issues, less prone to bone issues postmenopausal, but the yang type A, which is kind of like the polar opposite of the yin type B, tend to be prone to osteoporosis and osteopenia even before menopause. And each of these body types would also have different herbs. For example, if the for whatever reason the yin type B, and it's very possible, is faced with osteoporosis. And I won't get too into that, but it's very possible. My book will explain why that can be. They would actually, instead of taking herbs to strengthen their kidneys, which strengthen the bones, they would ingest herbs to strengthen their stomach and spleen. And so, ginger is one of the best herbs for the yin type B. because it can help strengthen the stomach and spleen, which indirectly helps the bones, obviously, because if you can utilize the food we digest, turn it into energy and other components, then we could certainly strengthen any part of our system. But the yang taipei, we'd go straight for the kidney, so we would use herbs like Romania, which would be shengduang in Chinese. They call it shengduang or sengjiwang in Korean. Romania is an herb which strengthens the kidneys and in turn also helps directly strengthen the bones. So we would totally different approach for the same exact symptom. And for libido, since you mentioned libido, again, having a stronger lower body helps with libido. And the yin type A, born with the strongest liver out of all the other body types, tends to have, a strong libido. However, there are exceptions to that. If the strong liver gets congested, then their libido would drop exponentially and have issues like ED, erectile dysfunction, and issues of that sort. But generally speaking, they're an animal in bed. And so, it doesn't necessarily mean that all of them are. It's just that they are the ones that tend to be most sexually adept, if you will. And so, again, the yang types tend not to be that way, and they may need some help. And herbs is a great way. Also, different body type specific meditation exercises for the yang types to bring energy down to what Ayurvedic may say is the lower chakra. In Satsang medicine, we say the liver and kidney group of organs. So,
Sorry. Do they use the herb? I think it's called acaranthus by Dentata. Mm. Do they use that herb to bring the energy down into the legs? That's a classic.
And Yuji,
TCM.
Yuji is a very good herb to do that. Yeah. You don't see Yuji used that much in Satsang medicine. Uh-huh. It is a great herb, and I've used it in my clinic. Yes. And so Yuji is actually used for the yin type A. It's a great herb to bring energy down to the lower body. We use in Satsang medicine one of the best herbs for the yang, I'd say, let's just say one of the yang type A. One of the best herbs you can do to bring energy down is actually using shergao, which is gypsum, because it's heavy. It's, it's very mineral rich, it's very heavy. And so that energy helps it really encourages the yang energy to sink downwards. And it's great for the yang type A's, say, overactive stomach, and because they have a stronger digestive system, sometimes overacts. And also is very nourishing, so it can help with kidneys as well. So that's one of our strongest herbs in Satsang medicine to bring the energy down. But Yuji is absolutely wonderful herb, and I have used that several times.
And that's actually a mineral gypsum,
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, mineral.
Yeah, the yang types do well with minerals. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're very, fine minerals. They powder them, so it makes it, you're not just like digesting a rock, It's actually, it actually coats the stomach, but it has other functions. But, the yin types really can't, excuse me, sorry about that. The yin types really can't digest these minerals as well, and that's why supplementing with larger amounts of minerals, zinc or calcium, for the yin types can actually backfire. So they have to be careful. The yang types, their stronger upper body really does help them break down these foods. And as a matter of fact, it's beneficial to have hearty foods and hearty herbs for the yang types. So shergao, gypsum, who would want to, ingest that, but it actually winds up being one of the best herbs for both yang types.
And that would bring like their energy, because sometimes when they get like a hot flash, men too, by the way, I found out interesting in my reading that low testosterone in men with andropause, they also get like heat rising into their face. And it's weird. Explain, doctor, why that kind of happens in the afternoon. Like, I had patients come in, they say, I could look at my watch, and every 4 o'clock or 2 o'clock or something like that, I feel like my head's going to explode. There's so much energy and blood that seems to be in my head. This was a recent patient I had. I think that they have that yang type.
So, you know, during the day, yang energy tends to rise, and at night, yin energy sinks. So during the day, it is common to experience hot flashes, absolutely. As yang rises and the heat within the body also rises, you have kind of like nature affecting, you know, the human body. And during the day, yang time is when you definitely could experience quite a few hot flashes. With my clients, I've noticed female clients going through menopause, I've noticed that they experience probably their worst hot flashes between 2 and 5 in the morning. And that's really when yang starts to rise. So I wonder if there's a difference between male and female. I don't work with enough male patients to know. But when yang starts to rise, that's when it tends to go out of control. And it also happens to be the time where the energetic cycle of the body goes from the last organ in the cycle to the first. So it goes from the liver to the lungs right around that time, so between 2 and 4 in the morning. And so that when the energy gets recycled somewhere along the way, there's a blockage or a stagnation of some sort, and that causes the yin and yang balance to get a bit out of control. So, male or female, I'd imagine, you know, both sexes experience definitely some type of symptoms related to menopause, or should we say, menopause for women or femalopause for men. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure there's some correlation.
Yeah,
there
you see it a lot. You know, androgen deficiency in the aging male. So that could be. Maybe we'll collaborate on a book. Maybe I do a lot of work with that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
Dr. Eugene, let's do that.
So tell us a little bit about some of the other herbs. Like, for instance, we've heard a lot about Donghui. We've discussed it on the air with patients. They've heard of that herb. It may be one of the more familiar TCM herbs to the listeners. What role does that play? You know, traditionally, I think they call it a blood-building herb and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's in the carrot family, you know, Donghui. So that's one that we see. And then also Angelica. Several of the angelicas are used for hot flashes, particularly in Western herbal medicine, but I wonder where it fits in Sesong.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. You know, Dr. Eugene, I giggled a little bit because I named my daughter Angelica. She's 12 years old now, and I did name her after Donghui. At least that was one of the reasons. I do tell my mom her name helped as well, too, but the Donghui or Donghui in Korean pronunciation is a beautiful, beautiful plant. Sounds like you're familiar with it. And it has so many wonderful properties and has helped me in my life quite a bit too, because I'm a yin type B and it's a yin type B herb. The reason why Donghui is a yin type B herb is because it has a warm to hot nature. Now, it's not as hot as, say, something like fuzi, aconite, or ginger, dried ginger, especially
dry ginger,
quite
yeah.
hot.
Right.
Yeah, but it's it nevertheless has a very warm to hot property. But it does so many things for the yin type B because it is also very, very supportive of the digestive system. And through the digestive system, in both Chinese and Korean medicine, we see the spleen can help build blood. So we can help benefit the blood. It is also very moving. And the yin types have issues quite a bit, quite often, with yin stagnation, which is stagnation in the lower body. And Donghui or Donghui has the ability to really circulate that energy well. So it helps prevent issues, especially menstrual-related issues. It helps balance the cycle. It also helps prevent headaches, while supporting the center, which would be the digestive system for the enteropy. So yes, it is a wonderful herb. As a matter of fact, I just saw some growing near my home the other day, and I was like, oh, yay, angelic. And I, you know, told my daughter, I said, I saw you in the forest.
Beautiful. Now, Chinese herbs are usually used in formulas oftentimes, not usually solely individual. They're thought up, you know, classically and balanced. Tell us about how they would kind of formulate a formula for someone with the different types of herbs, just in general.
Sure. So, Satsang medicine, it's hard to say that Satsang medicine is really an identity of itself. I mean, you can distinguish Satsang medicine from Chinese medicine, but the Chinese culture and the medicine really had a very strong historic influence on Korea. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of the formulas that we use in Satsang medicine were also formulas that were developed, especially during the Ming dynasty. And so, for example, there was a time in China where a man by the name of Li Dongyuan basically developed a slew of formulas for the digestive system to help with digestive disorders. Well, a lot of those formulas actually are used for the yin type B. However, they were modified by the founder of our medicine, which is Yi Jie Ma. He looked at all these formulas during the Ming, especially the Ming dynasty, but also during the Song dynasty, and said, this herb, this body type this body type can definitely use, but this herb is not compatible with him, or that herb is not compatible. For example, if there's a cold herb in a primarily warm formula, E.J. Ma would take out that cold herb and say, hey, this is really for a yin type, or vice versa. A primarily yin formula, and there's a warm herb, a yang herb, then E.J. Ma would probably have taken that one out, maybe supplement it with some other herbs, too, to help balance it out. So basically, Satsang medicine formulas are primarily derived from Chinese medical formulas. However, there are a lot of formulas in Satsang medicine that E.J. Ma himself derived, and there are probably, I'd say, between 5 and 15 herbs in each Satsang formula.
I see. Wow, that's complex. And some of them are classically the chief herbs, and then you have the deputies, and then you have the steers, and then you have the correctives that could kind of correct the temperature, kind of like classically the way an herbal formula is thought of, or how I teach my students how to design an herbal formula. Yeah.
Beautiful. Exactly. Yes. In Satsang medicine, it is the exact same concept. The idea that these herbs are working together to support this person's constitution, to balance their primarily stronger and weaker organs, and come up with a united sort of integrated approach to balance energies. Absolutely, you said that beautifully. Satsang medicine works in the exact same way.
Well, tell us a little bit about your book and where people can get it.
Okay, well, both my books, your Yin Yang Body Type and Yin Yang Balance for Menopause, can be found on Amazon.com. or directly from my publisher, which is innertraditions.com. And if you'd like some more information about Satsang medicine, you can always go to satsangmedicine.com, or you can check out some of the courses that we teach at our American Institute of Korean Traditional Medicine at koreanmedicine.us.
And you have an office in Portland, Oregon?
Yes, yeah. Just about 15 minutes south of downtown Portland in the Westland area. Yeah.
Great. That's exciting. I'm so happy to talk to you about this. It's opened my... I love the idea that there's a type of constitutional medicine that has more of a Korean tradition, and certainly... takes a long time to study it and become as adept as yourself there. But I think if patients read the book, they can get a good idea of where they belong in the universe, so to speak, and maybe why they have this constellation of symptoms. In other words, you know, what's interesting is, you know, in Western medicine, menopause is menopause is menopause. But you've pointed out that there are many different individual manifestations as how people are expressing that imbalance. I'm not going to call it a disease because it's not really a disease. It's really just part of life. But there's certainly uniqueness and idiosyncrasies. Any last thoughts before we sign off?
Oh, well, I just, you know, I have to say I appreciate your insights and your depth of knowledge in the medicine, and I thoroughly enjoyed talking with you. And I guess as a last note, you know, I'd say that Satsang medicine is it is a way to sort of look at life with the understanding that how we perceive and the influences of our organs on how we perceive really is the core to any type of healing, any type of balance, and also to enhance one's physical and psychological health and well-being.
Dr. Gary Wagman, thank you so much for your insights and your books. I look forward to seeing you one day in the flesh at a conference or something like that. Have a good
day.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, you too. Thank you so much. I'll look forward to seeing you too.
Great. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Wishing you the best and asking you to stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye. Till next time.